Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. On the show this week, Chris Patterson and Rachel Malcolm are joined by Scotland head coach Brian Eason as his squad looks ahead to the opening fixture in the Six Nations this weekend.
Welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. This week we're joined by two members of the Scotland's women's squad as we build up to the Six Nations, which tees off this Saturday. We've got head coach Brian Eason, captain, as always, Rachel Malcolm. And we're going to have a deep dive, really, into what to expect over the next two or three weeks in the Women's Six Nations, as well as looking back at the phenomenal fixture on Friday night in the Guinness Men's Six Nations. But we'll start in camp, first of all, and I'll start with you, Brian. How long has this been for coming? A game that's been on, or other games been on, there's been off. Is it a year since the French game? Or near on a year?
No,
it was October.
It was October. Yeah, it was like a year. It was October. We had a lot cancelled this time last year when it came to Six Nations. We've been up and down. I think we've had World Cup qualifiers cancelled. We've had them on and off, and so it's been a lot of adapting to do. There's been a lot of movement in terms of our programmes, our schedules. So this week has actually been it's an exciting week because we're now able to kind of fire a shot in anger, I suppose, after such a long time of planning, a long time of kind of hoping games would be going on. Ellen Dixon, our team manager, was telling me something like that. I believe there's 22 games or something we could have played, and it's all been pulled and pushed. And so it's been a tough schedule for the girls more than anybody. They've done really well to, I suppose, just to keep their heads focused on what lies ahead. So it's nice to be in camp now, though, and know that there's going to be a game on Saturday.
And Rich, you've been lucky. We've spoken every week, but you've been able to play. You've been playing. There's so many of the squad that haven't really had the opportunity to play. And although that game does feel like a year ago, as Brian says, it was October, but that was the only game really in a year for a lot of players. And I know you prepare the sessions and you kind of periodise training in order to peak, but do you feel a wee bit guilty that you've had the exposure to playing, or are the other girls just going to fit into the system? It's so difficult to prepare with, and everybody's in different places.
Yeah, no, I don't feel guilty, no. it would not be the emotion. I do feel lucky that I have been able to play in these times, being obviously based down in England and the Premier 15 still happening. And I think, you know, we as the players that have played feel, you know, a big responsibility to kind of get this game to be what it needs to be for the girls that haven't played in a while. You know, they've been working so hard. You know, we're coming up here off the back of a lot of game time down there, but they're, you know, if not setting the pace at training and making us rise to it. So you can tell the work that's going on up here, and they've been playing internal hitouts pretty much every weekend since lockdown ended. And I think, you know what it's like, Mossy, those aren't really the most enjoyable things in the world to do.
Horrible.
And, you know, but the intent and the intensity that they've played at in those is really showing through now in training. And it's a funny one because although they've not played, you know, the hunger to play and kind of just the excitement around this first game is like nothing we've ever really had before. So I think that is actually going to be a massive strength for us going into this game, is that kind of real just get up and go for it and give it absolutely everything we've got. So there's a lot of excitement in camp, and it's almost trying to keep it contained. So we let loose and it will be like a bull in the china shop, I think, the first 10 minutes. But no, it's a good vibe at the moment.
That's one of the things, Brian, you've said before, is almost tempering that enthusiasm in order to knuckle down and get the real clarity and quality of thinking. It'll be, as Rachel says, probably even more difficult with that desperation against a team who are setting the pace in women's rugby and have done for a long time, who know that the strength of England and how many game minutes their players have been playing. So as a coach, how do you strike that balance between using all that energy and excitement, but at the same time keeping a clear head?
I think you use the word clear a lot. I mean, the four words we would use is fresh, clear, confident and calm. And I think we're trying really hard to keep that calmness. And that's been quite difficult because, as we've already said, we've not played since October. We've now got a game against probably the best team in the world. as you've already highlighted, and I think Rachel was highlighting that yesterday. You know, that it's exciting, but the game's on Saturday. We've been in camp since Sunday, and if you don't temper that, you know, the game's played by Tuesday night, and come Saturday, everybody's knackered, and they're finished. So it's really important that we're careful about our loading. It's careful. It's important that we're, I suppose, our team meetings are our camp, that we were just talking about the small details rather than building up too early. So understandably, there's excitement. Understandably, they just want to go. But our job as a management team, and I suppose Rachel's job as a leader, is to make sure that we just keep feet firmly in the ground and we get ready for 3 o'clock on Saturday.
And you do have experience, Rachel, obviously, not personal experience, but alongside you in the team that will start at the weekend, you know, Lana Skeldon, Louise McMillan, Emma Wassell, you know, there's Helen Nelson, Megan Gaffney, Lisa Thompson, Chloe. There's a lot of experience in that. It's quite a settled looking team. And you must be, you know, reasonably confident in terms of the performance level that you can produce at the weekend.
100%. Yeah, I think we've got players now. It was quite funny yesterday. I was asked, like, who's like a young player to watch out for, and even our young players now have so much experience. So it's a really nice place to be in terms of the, looking at how we're going to look in a couple of years' time as well. It's super exciting. But as you say, there's tons of experience in that starting team. And for me, it just makes, you know, life so easy to have the players like Helen Nelson, like you say, in a pivotal role at 10, also as my vice captain, to help me with that on-field decision making, and also just keep everything kind of contained and keep us to the game plan as we go through the game. But in terms of kind of how confident we are, I think we as a team feel like we've never been in a better place, and we almost are kind of just want to go out there and show it on the pitch, because, you know, it's all good us saying and doing it in training, but it would be really nice to get out and really put that into practice and just keep improving throughout the championship. I think obviously France was a massive high for us, but it was almost disappointing not to be able to follow that straight up with another game, and we've been waiting and waiting and waiting to do it. But I actually think, you know, what's happened with kind of what's going on in the world right now, we've had so much time together, more time together than we've ever had, and consistently over kind of 3 week blocks or 2 week blocks, that we're more prepared now than ever. So it's a really nice way to go into a game, you know, feeling that prepared and that confident, and like you say, with players who have consistently played for Scotland. So it's exciting.
And you and Helen, obviously teammates at club level as well, so that relationship is an understanding and the game plan and the vice captain. Is that something you share for the club as well?
Yeah, definitely. Nelly's obviously been down at Lightning a wee while now, and she's a really like clear communicator. She's got a very calm head under pressure and stuff, and I'm maybe teetering on the other edge. So she's great to have alongside me and keep me calm. And I think, you know, like you say, having that experience at club together, you know, we've been through tough times there as well. So it's kind of just managing those and helping each other out in those situations. And I think on a playing level, she's really gone from strength to strength, learning from the likes of Emily Scarra, outsider at club and stuff like that. It's been brilliant for her, and she's playing some of the best rugby I've ever seen her play. So I'm excited to see her go as well this championship.
Massive challenge though, Brian, isn't it? England, you say, I believe, well, they are the best team in the world, certainly one of the most consistent teams, if not the most consistent team. It's a huge challenge for us at the weekend. Where do you think the kind of key battles are? What's the biggest threat? And there's a few that England will pose.
Listen, first of all, as you say, it's a challenge. It's a huge challenge, but it's a challenge that I think that we're ready to take head on. It's not a challenge we're worried about. It's not a challenge that we're sitting back and, you know, talking about opposition too much. We've been quite tight in our preparation and been kind of going down the 75-25 route in terms
more about yourself.
75% ourselves, yeah. And 25% the opposition, because we're at the stage where we think we're at the stage where we need that 75% right before that other 25% comes into place anyway. So we're pretty well prepared. And Rachel's saying we've been together for such a long time. It feels like the longest pre-season ever. You know, it's like it's been. But because of that, you're able to do much more on skill development. You're able to do much more on strength conditioning work, which then puts you in a good place. So no matter who we were playing against, it was going to be a game that we were ready for. So the fact that England, you know, it doesn't matter, it doesn't bother us, we're prepared and ready to go. In terms of them as a team, I think we've we know what we're going to come up against. We know that they'll kick a lot. They'll not play a lot of rugby in their own half. They'll not do that. And we're aware of that. We're aware of what they're going to come up against. So defensively, I think we're in a really good place. I think we know how to defend them. We know what we're going to expect. And then on the back of that, we have got some players who, when we do break up their structure, which is a key for us, we have got some real, and you've mentioned Chloe, you've mentioned Lisa Thompson, Megan Gaffney, we've got some real runners, broken field runners that can put them under pressure. So we know what to expect. We know it's going to be a challenge, but I think because of the preparation time we've had, we're ready to hit it head on.
And the other thing, it's live in BBC iPlayer, Rach, which is this weekend, Saturday, down to Doncaster. It's an away game, but it's live in BBC iPlayer, which is another big step, an important step. We've always spoken about getting the exposure that's needed, but it's a great platform and something to really look forward to at the weekend.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think, you know, the more we can get the women's game out here, and, you know, Brian and I talk about it a lot, you know, a lot of it is about, you know, the players of the future, and a big thing I'm passionate about is us kind of getting ourselves out there and being role models for those young girls and even young boys coming through to see us, you know, being role models and playing rugby for our country. Because, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't even know there was a Scotland women's team, and I didn't know there was opportunities for me to play rugby. So, you know, I'm really passionate about, you know, girls knowing that that is out there for them. And I think the more, you know, exposure we can get through games being streamed or being played live or whatever it is fantastic. And I'm really excited to see how us being in this kind of separate window to the men's really does push the women's game forward, and hopefully it has a positive effect.
You still take inspiration from the men's performance, certainly the men's performance on Friday night. Is that something, Brian, that would you use clips, or even Scotland winning away in England at the start of Six Nations? Is there similarities you can pick out?
Listen, there always are, you know, when it's Scotland England fixtures, no matter what you're playing. I think you could take similarities from the Scotland England Tiddlywinks Championship, knowing that you just want to win the game. And
is that televised? You know,
it was on the iPlayer, actually. But, you know, you don't, to be honest, when you win at Twickenham or you win at the Stade de France, I don't think you really need to show it, because, you know, I mean, we've got a group of players who are, you know, passionately, you know, Scottish, who want Scotland to win at anything. And, you know, we all watched the game on Friday night and, you know, shouting at the TV. I've been, you know, listening but more at your commentary, to be fair.
I was going to say, shouting at me.
But, but games at Twickenham and stuff, we don't go there as much as we probably could, because we're actually thinking about ourselves as a group and what we can bring to the party. So, you know, but I'm certainly inspired by the national team. I'm inspired by the national men's team and what they're doing. And I know Rachel, as we speak about it, and I know the rest of the girls are, the inspiration that Friday night can bring to us. And when you come into camp on the back of, you know, Scotland winning at Twickenham or Scotland winning in Paris, it's a real fill-up for us all. We all love it, we all enjoy it. And then and to be honest, going into a hotel, everybody looks at Scottish rugby as a whole. It's not just looking at the women's team or the men's team. Everybody feels that Scottish rugby is in a good place.
On that, Rachel, start with you. What was your assessment of the game on Friday? I mean, it seemed to be similar to a lot of other games in the Guinness Six Nations this year, where so much has happened. Actually trying to quantify it and understand what happened at what point in the game is difficult. It was another completely action-packed, I don't know, topsy-turvy game, especially towards the end. But what was your take on the performance?
It's a hard one to kind of look back on it and kind of talk about it as a whole game, because it's almost like there was little games within it. You know, I think there was a lot of positives in terms of like our set piece functioning a lot better, which gave us a good platform to play off. I think we had tons of positives in terms of how aggressively we carried the ball at times, particularly some of the back row play. I thought Nick Haining starting was fantastic. I thought he was a real standout, particularly in the first kind of 60 minutes of that game. He was everywhere. And then, you know, Hamish Watson, we've talked about him every week, but he had another great game and was just, you know, the amount of work he gets through is unbelievable. But I think we had a lot kind of of control in the right areas is probably one way to talk about it. You know, I think, you know, the play around their try line and stuff like that, and just the little bits of detail that we've maybe kind of missed out on in previous games, we brought that back, but it was just kind of end-to-end mental stuff. And I think, you know, you talk about inspiration, but like the character they showed at the end of that game to, you know, off the back of obviously Finn getting sent off, and to kind of hold that together and you know, see out the game. And yeah, it was just unbelievable, but absolutely brilliant. And we finished the game, and I messaged one of the girls, and I was just like, I've never felt more ready to play for Scotland right now, you know. So yeah, definitely inspirational.
It was different, wasn't it, Brian, to Twickenham? I actually thought, this is going to sound ridiculous, but the reason we won at Twickenham was control, composure, decision-making, understanding, as well as all the exuberance and the quality in defence. So you could almost say it was a controlled victory at Twickenham. The victory in the past, I think, was more just guts, wasn't it? I mean, there was so much at stake. It was wet. It was difficult, certainly, first half to handle ball. But just having that fight within your system and within your organisation, I think was more the reason for the victory rather than the top-end quality that we probably saw at Twickenham. Would you agree? Or was that, I mean, totally you could assess it in so many different ways.
Listen, Rachel said it. She was right. She was bang on. It's very difficult to put your finger on exactly why. There was fights. There was battles within battles. There was reason for some things. I thought that... I thought it showed a lot of togetherness. You're right. I thought there was real fight for each other. There was real, you know, Rachel mentioned some players in there. I thought Chris Harris, for example, defensively.
His work rate in defence is incredible.
His work rate in defence was just phenomenal. I counted five tackles in a row at one stage within, you know, within, I think maybe France having the ball for I don't know how many phases. We made five tackles within that. There was just real togetherness, but I also thought that the way France played, actually, it suited us. I mean, France had not played any rugby really in the championship in terms of in their own half. They then, you know, they did a lot of kicking and then they played a little bit, but you saw them in one of the first attacks and just going from their own line. And, you know, it's a brilliant game of rugby to watch. I thought Finn controlled the game. I thought he kicked well tactically. I thought he kicked well. But then I thought on the touchline that Grant Gilchrist and Sam Skinner were excellent at line out. Nick Hanen carried ball. There was just fight right across the whole group. And yeah, it was a probably different performance than Twickenham, but it wasn't Scottish in the last few minutes, because normally the Scottishness in me went, oh my, it's a penalty, right? Okay, they've kicked the ball out and we've lost the ball in the corner and they've kicked the ball out. Then we got the ball again, and again, it wasn't Scottish to keep the ball and score in the corner.
Well, that takes composure, doesn't it? That takes, I mean, you've almost been given a second chance, and critics or potentially people out with Scotland would probably point to, oh, but Bruce Doolan should have put out. Of course he should have put it out. Of course he should have ended the game. Yeah. But the bare facts were they never. Chris Harris, you mentioned, actually made the tackle. He's still alert and alive enough to make that tackle, force a penalty. And then, although it's a second chance, you're still going to convert that. And Rachel, you know, being so close to the line, and I think some of the Welsh boys spoke about or gave credit to the French guys a week before for actually putting your hand up and putting yourself in the position where you're going to carry. We must have been, what, 2.5-3 minutes of quality retaining possession and then the finish. It's hard to do that under that pressure in those conditions, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I am, you know, that last build-up play was, you know, I think that just epitomised what the game was for Scotland. You know, they stuck to task. They kind of just went and were just so, so kind of resilient in the way they were playing. You know, they were banging the door down for minutes at a time, like you say, in tough conditions, in a position where, you know, you probably should have lost the game by now, but they were still in it and they held in and they stuck together as a team and they finished it off. And that takes incredible control at that point in the game when, you know, you're watching it and you're thinking, like, you know, however many phases in, like, they must be absolutely knackered at that phase of the game. You know, you're waiting for someone to almost like spill the ball or something.
Well,
like
Alex Craig had a beauty, didn't he? He dropped it twice and still caught it. An amazing piece of skill.
Yeah, so like that's the kind of bits at that point in the game where you expect to see it. You know, seeing a try like that right at the death in what's been an absolutely brutal contest with probably one of the best teams in the world is you know, testament to the game they've played, but I think it really epitomised what they were about on Friday night.
If we take a wee bit of emotion away from that and put your coach's hat on here, Bernie, that period of, say, from the last line out to the try that was scored, does that, I think it does, and I'm sure you'll agree, that represents progress, because that's an area of the field and an area of attack that probably has cost us in maybe the last 12, 18 months in terms of having a lot of possession near the line, not finishing it. Adding the pressure, adding the do or die element of it because the clock's in the red. There's progress in skill level, but there's also progress, and as Rachel says, that the understanding and then the end product being a try.
Yeah, I think the skill level was, well, there was two things for me. I thought the skill level was outstanding. Now, you know, taking away the weather, taking away the wet ball, taking away the 82 minutes on the clock and the amount of energy that they've used for that last 82 minutes. They're also against a huge defence who are double teaming you hard around that area. And the composure for me as a coach in there, just the composure just to you know, to look at that defence, it's like you're narrowing it up and then you were able to stretch them and, you know, to be able to then just, you know, for Adam to get the ball, to float that pass across the top as well. As you say, we've maybe just had that white line mentality, that kind of try line mentality, just keep going, just keep going, keep going. Whereas there was clearly comms from out wide, there was clearly, you know, good decisions to, you know, they didn't get too flat. They were, I just felt that the, as you say, the last 18 months, we've probably let ourselves down in that gold zone. Mm-hmm. But to do what we did, that, you know, with keeping the ball for 2 minutes, then to attack like that was, it was exciting. I have to say, I jumped off my seat.
especially, like you say, with Adam Hastings, you know, making that kind of killer pass in those conditions at that point of the game with so much at stake when he's played so little rugby in such a long time. Mm-hmm. So, like, that takes a lot of guts and shows a lot of character there as well.
And a decent finish again for Doohan, top try scorer on the Guinness Six Nations as well. And he's some machine, isn't he? Like, we've seen it for Edinburgh for a number of years, but his power and his... I think a lot of players, when they make the step up from, you know, professional rugby to international rugby, it takes a little bit of time to get used to and understand the different speed. I mean, since he's arrived, I think he's, what, 8 tries and something like 9 performances or whatever that, and 5 during the Six Nations. It's pretty good numbers, pretty good going, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal athlete, isn't he? I mean, he's just such a... I mean, you look at the... I suppose it's the athleticism, his ability to break tackles, his ability to break line, and I think when you've got a player like that, you think about defending that. You think about, are we going to double defend them? Are we going to, you know, who's going to close the gate early? Are the fullback going to close early because you're up against somebody that size?
Yes,
it makes yes, you would. You're right. You would, but if fullback start closing the space, then they leave space elsewhere. Yeah, so you've got picks through. And so having a player like that, having the ability of somebody that size in your back line, it just gives options elsewhere as well. And when you've got people like, I suppose, Finn and, you know, Cammy Redpath as well, mm-hmm. you know, coming, I thought Cammy Redpath against England, it just shows how good Scotland are with a ball player at 12. When you've got a winger like that outside of Finn and the Cammy Redpath, it leaves spaces elsewhere. But you're right, Doohan coming in for his first 9 caps or whatever it is, he's just a huge threat already.
Well, Rachel mentioned Hamish Watson. Brian, you've known Hamish for a long, long time, spent a lot of time in and around academies and working alongside him, all different programmes. I don't know how to ask this question. He's been nominated for Player of the Tournament, but I suppose he's some machine, isn't he?
Oh, he's a machine. He's just, I've known Hamish since he was 16, I think it was. And I remember when he came up to Edinburgh, you were still at Edinburgh most, I think.
I remember him coming in.
When Brads was there, Michael Bradley. And I remember one of the first sessions and Brad says, right, forwards over there, backs over there. And Hamish went with the forwards and Brad's in his Irish accent, hey, son, get over there. And Hamish kind of looked at me and said, I'm a 7. And genuinely, I mean, Hamish plays so hard. I mean, you know what he's like training wise. He'll train hard, but the difference he has when he plays is just phenomenal. He's like a bouncy ball. I mean, you can't put him down. He'll hit the deck. He just comes back up again. And he's just been phenomenal this year, and he deserves that accolade of being nominated for the top player in the Six Nations. He's just, you know, I hear people say he's not big enough. I hear people say I don't go with that. I just can't back that up. And the amount of work that he puts in, he's maybe used as a ball carrier probably more often than not. He has got the skills in the outside channels as well to link. Mm-hmm. He's got skills all over the park. So great kid.
No, I remember you say that when he was he came up to Edinburgh. I think it was in the Sevens program as well, and I was still playing for Edinburgh, and it was during a Six Nations weekend, so we'd lost a lot of players I'd retired internationally, and we were over in Ulster, really up against it, and that's when Ulster, as they are now, were flying with, you know, Ruan Pienaar and Johan Muller and Robbie Dyack and so on, and we were really up against it, and about 15, 20 minutes to go, I looked and saw this guy who just joined us, as you say, a lot thinner than he is now, with a single bit of tape around his head, standing at the side of the pitch. And I'll be honest, I thought, oh no, poor soul. And he's coming on and he's kind of rubbing that. And honestly, within 30 seconds, he'd stripped the ball off somebody, thumped somebody else, made a turnover, made a 50-yard line break. And I was like, I like this kid. He's some machine. Unbelievable. He's just added to it and added to it and added to it. And we talk about...
He has added to it.
Yeah, we're talking about these kind of moments and these star moments, and you get quite, I suppose, enthusiastic and emotional about it because it is brilliant to see. But Rachel, as Brian says, in an era that's dominated largely by results and stats and performances, his numbers in terms, I don't believe he missed a tackle in entire Six Nations. He's carried
more tackles in 2 years.
2 years. So
not
all the
2 years.
Yeah. So when we're talking about all the kind of stuff that you can't really measure in terms of his attitude and his aggression and his bouncy ball, his stuff you can measure is top of the charts as well.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's just unbelievable in terms of he gets through a lot of work, but he does it so well as well. You know, he's in every facet of the game that probably goes against the grain in terms of, like Brian says, people say he's lightweight, but he's carrying against massive players and bouncing them off and rolling into the next one and into the next one. And, you know, he's just so effective in what he does, and he's really unique. Which I think is quite cool in this day and age in rugby, where, you know, particularly in the men's game, where everything's going towards being, you know, quite, you know, mass orientated and stuff like that, particularly in the forwards. You know, he brings something completely different. And I think he's a good role model to have as well. Like you say, someone would read, you know, a book by its cover looking at Hamish and think that he wouldn't be able to compete at that level. But it's good for young players coming through to see that you can be a different brand of rugby and still compete at that level. But as you say, his numbers speak for themselves in terms of his number of tackles, his turnovers and his ball carries. Yeah, he's been brilliant.
He's clear and kicked a touch at the end of the game, and Twickenham could do with a wee bit of work, but there's always something to work on, isn't there?
It's more like watching a goalkeeper throw the ball up and launch it.
That is this genuine fear I have of ever having to do that.
Yeah, I'm just going to say to Rachel,
I would be that person to like scuff it and they catch it and run in for the try or something.
You know, I've been involved in games where dead time and certain player, Mike Blair actually, we'll name him Shim. He tried to get the ball off the field but decided to use his left foot instead of his right foot, and it kicked it backwards towards touchline and failed to hit touch. And now if you want to put GPS or measure somebody's desperation, you should just clip that little bit of his GPS where he realised that, and it was an Ulster again, we were leading by 2 or 3 points. And the clock was in the red and they kicked it back, failed to miss touch. And we must have conceded about 20 yards. And his effort level there, I tell you, if you could bottle that, who knows?
Everything but kicking.
Well, the Guinness Pro 14, pro teams were in action for the final round last weekend. Glasgow got a good win, bonus point win. I think it's the fourth win in a row. At Scotland, 46 points to 25 against Bennett. A bit of a scrappy game. Glasgow scored at important times and scored quickly back-to-back on a couple of occasions that kind of gave them the comfortable lead. And then George Horn back playing. Good to see that. So, and scoring, as always, standard practice for George. Ross Thompson having another assured game at standoff. And, you know, as Glasgow look to build for next year, they're burning these young players who are performing and picking up wins, certainly at home, which is good. Edinburgh, Brian, you saw a bit of the Edinburgh game. They were away to the Dragons at the Principality. A disappointing first half, wasn't it? A really disappointing first half. Some better signs in the second half, but just fell short again.
Yeah, I think so. I think where it was a difficult ask for them to go to Principality, you know, and the, you know, knowing that it was, you know, the Dragons had to win by a certain amount of points. I think Cockers is 26 players out at the moment. He's going to missing a few players to choose from.
Some of the youngsters came in, Mark Carey.
Yeah, really. It was really good to see that. And I think, you know, the big thing for me this season, albeit, look, I know that internationalists have gone away for both sides. There's, you know, it's been different. They've been away longer. But just seeing the young kids like Jamie Dobie, like Ross Thompson, like Rufus McLean, like Matt Curry, you know, players are getting an opportunity now. And the positive thing for me is that not just they're getting the opportunity, but they're actually taking that opportunity and grabbing it with both hands. And that for me is really, really positive for Scottish rugby in the long term. Edinburgh, you're right, first half, it was a tough shift. You know, Dragons threw everything at them, obviously needed, I think it was a 44-point buffer or something to get to Europe. But then Edinburgh just came back into it and they were unlucky in the end. Yeah. They were really unlucky in the end. Blair Kinghorn moved into 10. I thought he looked quite exciting. And again, another youngster. So, it was a difficult one, but...
Yeah, they managed to wrestle back momentum of the game, really. I think in the first half, they didn't have a lot of possession, and possession did have they turned over too easily. But you could see the momentum building towards the second half. The game opened up a little bit, but it showed you the tries that Edinburgh are capable of scoring that we've not really seen a huge amount of this season because of the disruption. But both teams look ahead to Europe this weekend at Glasgow, away in Montpellier on Friday night in the Challenge Cup, which is a big ask. Montpellier had a huge win away at Toulouse at the weekend. Montpellier haven't had a great season, but there's some big names. But Glasgow will enjoy to get their international players back. And I suppose similar to the national game of the week, the previous week, playing French teams, you're always in with an opportunity. They'll always give you an opportunity if you're good enough to exploit it.
I think you're right, and I think the important thing against any French side is to keep the scoreboard ticking over and just keeping in the game. You know what it's like with the French once they get their tails up, that they're a difficult, especially in France, it's a difficult place. Montpellier will be tough. That result against Toulouse at the weekend was probably a surprise. They've not had a great season. But you're right, Glasgow having the internationalists back, who will be on cloud nine, having won in Paris, you know, just the week prior. So, you know, it'll be interesting. And, you know, it's tough when you go over anywhere. It's a tough place to go. But, you know, what sort of lose? You're over there. Let's, you know, you're always got, as you say, you've always got a chance against French. You don't know what kind of side's going to turn up, do you?
And Rachel, Edinburgh go there in the Champions Cup. They get a shot at the indoor disco venue, Racing, the weekend. Again, they'll enjoy having players back. Finn Russell, who's suspended, obviously for his red card at weekend, won't be facing against his fellow countrymen. But that's another big ask, isn't it? But I get a similar story, though, isn't it? I mean, it's almost ready-made for a Richard Cockerell-type performance to really go into the lion's den and produce a performance that could almost get a win. But it's a big ask against one of the Galacticos in Europe, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, Racing are probably one of the most exciting teams to watch because they do play that kind of flair rugby that obviously Finn is suited to. It's you know, good, I think, for the boys that he's maybe not available this week. But it'll still be a tough ask. You know, they've got a lot of players, both who play internationally and who don't, who are, you know, at the kind of top of the game, and will be a real tough game from a defensive point of view to kind of cover all of those threats, because they do have a real kind of mishmash in terms of they can kick,
threats
they can
from everywhere,
go
isn't
through
it?
They've really got threats everywhere, so from a defensive point of view it would be a big ask from Edinburgh. But as you say, I think teams like that do leave holes to attack into, and I think it's capitalizing on, you know, that broken defense when it comes, and that turnover play will be so crucial for Edinburgh to really kind of threaten them as well. So hopefully will be an exciting game and they take it to them.
Yeah, sometimes when you play against a team with so many threats defensively or offensively, it means your defense is on point even more.
And
you're never fueled by fear, but there is that, listen, if we don't get this right, it's even more difficult. So So with that, it's sometimes I've seen it, I suppose, Brian, as a negative attitude, but it's not, it's just a heightening of the senses out of respect for what's coming your way. So sometimes your best performances in defence are against the best attacking team.
As you say, it just heightens the senses. You've got to be aware, because it was just, as we talked about before, about Doohan with the national team, having him leave space elsewhere. So it heightens the senses of the back three, right, of what we're going to do. You know, Racing have got Vakatawa at 13, they've got Titi Thoma, they've got, you know, they've got Curtly Beale, they've got Simon Zeebo, they've got players, they've got threats all over the pitch. So it does, as a defence, it's you just can't afford to switch off. Whereas sometimes against a weaker attacking side, you switch off, which is sometimes as bad as playing against some of the best attackers in the world. So you have to be on it for 80 minutes against that attacking side. You know, as I've already said, Vakatawa punching holes for an exciting back three. I mean, it's a great experience for anybody to go and play, as you say, in the Disco Arena in Paris. And I believe there was a little bit of fun with Finn waving the Edinburgh boys goodbye on the plane on Saturday morning. We'll see you next week, lads. But no, yeah. Finn, you won't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. Well, that's Sunday at 12:30 kickoff, I think, in the Champions Cup. So all the best to the two Scottish teams in Europe. On Vakatawa, it was quite funny, that ridiculous offload in the build-up to, I think it was Pinot's try at the weekend. It looked like he was playing walk and touch, and then still managed it. Honestly, he's the only person that could. It was walking. And I just said in commentaries, again, probably embarrass himself, he just has to be far more decisive. And then the following play, he walks into three tackles and offloads. I'm like, wow, special talent.
You said that about two. You did say that about two seconds before. I think I tried to text you as well.
I know, some machine. Anyway,
it's like him. It's like Vakatawa. I don't know if you saw Sammy Rudd-Rathers. Did you see Rudd-Rathers off? Well, I mean, that's just. It's just phenomenal skill level that some of these guys have got. And it's you know, rugby at the moment, I think after the Autumn Nations Cup, I think everybody was kind of sitting back and thinking, oh God, what's the Six Nations going to be like? But I think, you know, I know we've just looked at the Scotland game against France, but the whole of the Six Nations, for me, it was a joy to watch. I think it's really, for me as a coach going into Six Nations with a woman, it's exciting, and I think that's how rugby should be played. I think it should be played with a smile on your face, and it's a spectacle. It's a, you know, let's not forget it's a spectacle, and people want to watch, and that's how I suppose you want to play as well.
Well, you're right, Brian. I agree. We've seen an incredible few weeks of rugby, some terrific performances, and now the opportunity for you and your team to continue that. Good luck with the games ahead. Obviously, good luck on Saturday down at Doncaster, 3 p.m. Against England. And then you've got a down week before you play Italy at Scotson. It's the next home game, and then the finals thereafter. So good luck from all of us here for the game of the weekend and for the Six Nations ahead of us.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, we'll be back next week with more exclusive content.